God, as things turn out, is vitally interested in what's going on in our hearts. Let me be a little bit more in your face with that. God, as things turn out, is vitally interested in what's going on in your heart, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because we think and act out of what's happening in our hearts. Good behavior comes from a good heart. Bad behavior comes from a bad heart. And that's why Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Bernie Diamond, and it's great to be with you again. Today we're going to have a bit of a poke around and look at what's going on in your heart from a different perspective. And stick with me, because at the end of today's message I'll be telling you about a special booklet that I'd love to send you to help you live in the mighty blessings of God. Hey, purity is a funny concept in this day and age. On the one hand, as consumers, we want to know that what we're buying is pure. If you're buying a wedding ring, you want to know that it's made of pure gold. If you're buying bottled water, you want to know that it's pure. Purity means that what we're buying is free from contaminants. It means it's the real thing. We're getting what we paid for. So, as a consumer, whether it's gold or water, purity is something that we value incredibly highly. Would you agree? But the instant we apply this idea of purity to people, to ourselves, what you get is this: come on, just hang on a minute. This isn't the 1950s religious state you old people grew up in. None of that old-fashioned moralizing, thank you. My private life is exactly that. It's private, it's none of your business, and don't give me that sexual purity thing. Get with the times. That's the thing. When we apply that idea of purity to people, mostly what that brings to mind is sexual purity. The idea of no sex before marriage and staying faithful to your husband or to your wife when you are married. And in most people's thinking, those things went out with the ark. But for me, purity is much more than that. If we take that same definition of purity that we used for water and gold and we apply it to ourselves, what it means is being free from contaminants, getting what we paid for. And when it comes to people, gee, that's not a bad thing. Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." That can't be a bad thing. But in this day and age, what does that really mean? I guess as I try to figure out what Jesus meant, I kind of tried to look at who we are, you and I, from the outside in. And what struck me was the connection between our tongue and our heart, between the things we say and the stuff we do. And working back from the tongue, I thought about foot-in-mouth disease. How what we say is in fact a reflection of the purity or otherwise of our heart. So here are my three steps to curing foot-in-mouth disease in reverse sequence from the outside in, and it kind of talks about this whole issue of purity through and through. Now, step number three from the outside in is never write in an email that which you wouldn't post on Facebook. Talking behind someone's back is just about one of the worst and nastiest things that you and I can do. It doesn't really diminish them, it diminishes us. Gossip is like poison, and the person ultimately whom it kills off is the gossiper, because people stop trusting us. They figure if that's what we say about others behind their backs, what are we saying about them when they're not here? Apostle Paul, he writes to the Ephesians, "Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up, as there is need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear." Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. So simply don't say bad things about bad people. Check the tongue. But that's not always that easy, because our tongues so often run out of control. That's what the Bible teaches. You can read it for yourself in James chapter 3, verses 1 to 8. Okay, so what's the answer? Well, that brings me to step number two. Step number two is never think something that you wouldn't say to the person's face. It's amazing how what we think is what we end up doing. It's about everything you and I say and do begins with a thought. And thoughts become actions. And so when you really annoy me and I start to want to think some bad things about you, destructive thoughts, angry thoughts, vengeful thoughts that'll turn into actions, or in fact inactions, that'll ruin our relationship and diminish us both. I try and remember Paul's advice as he sat in a dungeon on death row. And I put it into action, or I try to, sooner rather than later. Paul writes to his friends in Philippi, chapter 4, verse 8. "Finally, beloved, whatever's true, whatever's honourable, whatever's just, whatever's pure, whatever's pleasing, whatever's commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, then think about those things." So in other words, when I'm thinking about bad stuff, you know what I do? I decide to think about good stuff in the end, because while I'm thinking good stuff, there's no room to think bad stuff. But there's another level, a deeper level at play here. So my step number one for avoiding foot and mouth disease is never allow something dark to fester in your heart. Even deeper than our thoughts are our emotions. It turns out that our thoughts not only go outwards into actions, things we say and do, but our thoughts go downwards like roots into the soil, into our heart, into that place where we live, that place where we feel things so deeply, into that place where hurts can accumulate and turn into hatred and vengeance, or sacrifice and love. Jesus said, Luke chapter 6, verse 45, "The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure of his heart produces evil, for it's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks." Now, whilst I can actually choose what I think about, as determined, as strong-willed as I am, I can't seem to control what I feel in my heart. Have you noticed that too? So I go to the only person who can make a difference in that place. And I say to him, "Create in me a clean heart, O God. Put a new and right spirit within me. The sacrifice acceptable to you, O God, is a broken spirit and a broken and contrite heart you will not despise." Psalm 51, verses 10 and 17. Seems that when God changes our hearts, our thoughts are lifted up out of the muck. And what we say and do more and more reflects the heart changer who's been doing the heavy lifting for us on the inside. It's the only thing I've ever found that works. Jesus. And so if I bring those three levels together, what we say and do on the outside, what we think in our heads, and what we feel in our hearts, if the contaminants can be removed from that whole pipeline, then what you have is a person who's pure through and through, the real deal. What you see is what you get. No evil lurking there. An open, forgiving, loving, decent human being from the outside to the inside, but even more importantly, from the inside out. Because it all starts with a heart. The psalmist put it like this, Psalm 24, verses 3 to 5. "Who is the one who gets to ascend the hill of the Lord? And who's the one who gets to stand in his holy place? I'll tell you who. Those who have clean hands and pure hearts. Those who don't lift up their souls to what's false and don't swear deceitfully. They're the ones who receive the blessing from the Lord and vindication from God, the God of their salvation." You see that? Who is it who goes to stand before God and sees him? Those with clean hands and pure hearts. Those who are pure from the outside in and from the inside out. We get to see God, and not just when we leave this world, but now in our lives. That's the blessing of purity of heart. The thing I've noticed, as God deals with the dark, slimy muck in my heart, little by little, day by day, I see him more clearly, I hear him more clearly, and hopefully, I look a whole bunch more like Jesus and sound a whole bunch more like Jesus in my own peculiar way. That's the journey that theologians will call sanctification. I prefer to think of it more like rehabilitation, being restored back into the original image of God. And as much sometimes as I want to go and hold on to something dark in my heart, when someone wrongs me, I want to hate them. I know that if I do that, it's like a dark veil between God and me. It obscures him from me. And in a sense, I'm left alone to live out the terrible consequences of that darkness. It scrambles my thoughts. It completely destroys my life. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. He's a God who wants to bless you, who wants to pour his extravagant grace out on you to give you a new life, however impossible that might seem given the things you have going on in your life just at the moment. And that's why I'd love to send you a free copy of our latest life application booklet. It's called God's Abundant Blessing, and it's full of life-changing practical Bible teaching to help you actually lay hold of his mighty blessing and his extravagant grace. To request your copy, stop by our mobile-friendly website, christianityworks.com, and you'll see that free offer right there toward the top of the homepage. Click on it, pop in your name and email, and that e-booklet will be winging its way to your inbox in just seconds. Again, that web address is christianityworks.com. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Bernie Diamond, and I'll catch you again same time tomorrow with a different perspective.